I'd like to begin by reading Matthew 5, verses 43 to 48. Oh, got my message up there. And it reads, "You have heard that it has been said, thou shalt love thy neighbor and hate thine enemy. But I say unto you, love your enemies, bless them that curse you, and do good to them that hate you, and pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you, that ye may be children of your Father which is in heaven. For he maketh his sun to rise on the evil and on the good, and sendeth rain on the just and on the unjust. For if ye love them which love you, what reward have ye? Do not even the publicans the same? And if ye salute your brethren only, what do ye more than others? Do not even the publicans so? But be ye therefore perfect, even as your Father which is in heaven is perfect." When I read this passage, I think of Twitter. I used to get on Twitter a lot just to see what was going on in the world. Here's the problem, though. Whenever I get on there, I get so upset when I read the comments. People would spout just some of the stupidest things. I'm sure you understand that. I lie in bed at night and just get so ramped up by the comments. Amanda, my wife, would recommend not reading before I go to bed just because I get so hyped up. And then I tell her about it. But I kept on reading until one day I got sick of it and I deleted the app from my phone. And now I'm much happier. I wasn't exactly loving my enemy whenever I was on Twitter. In fact, I was doing the exact opposite. I wasn't wondering how I could help the commenter improve their lives, but I was thinking just how messed up they must be. I think a lot of this is prevalent today, this type of thinking. Not a lot of real dialogue is actually going on. It just seems like there's a lot of name-calling and just a lot of slander, and no one really seems to be listening. And I believe the major culprit to this hatred is because of the groups and tribes that we've all created. A lot of emphasis now is on diversity. We have diversity in business, we have diversity in education, diversity in pretty much everything we see. And the idea behind diversity is that we want to see the differences of others and to celebrate those differences. The problem is that it is separating us instead of uniting us. Everyone is trying to find the group they belong to or the certain set of groups that they belong to, and anyone that opposes that group is now a threat. You know, it's natural for all of us to form into groups. Groups give us security. We come into a community because we as individuals are not strong enough. No man is completely independent. We can't do it all, so we need groups to fill in the gaps that we have. We need each other to survive, to thrive, and to just live happier lives. What has happened, though, is that the world has become more chaotic and scary. In the last century, we dealt with the Cold War, and now we're dealing with the aftermath of those problems. And then with the advent of the computer technology and how everything is speeding up, it's hard for us to handle. In the book Future Shock by Alvin Toffler, he predicted that this was going to happen in the decades after he wrote this book. The acceleration of technology would be hard for our minds to handle. We wouldn't be able to process it fast enough. And so to cope with these effects, we turn to groups for comfort, since they give us the security we need. You ever wonder why there's these things called safe spaces? How they're popping up? Well, it's because people want to feel safe. There's so much chaos going out there that people need that comfort. And when this safe environment is imposed, we fight back vehemently. Let's take the political sphere, for instance. So for conservatives, they're just a bunch of stupid rednecks, deplorables. For liberals, they're all just stuck up with loose morals. The same thing follows in any group. It could be political, religious, or whatever. We tend to see the other group as somehow evil or somehow the enemy. Because the world has become so complicated, we tend to generalize each other. We need to generalize in some ways. Generalizing puts things into boxes. We take information, the chaos of information, and we put it into some formation so that we can make some sense of things. But we've gone to extremes in generalizing, and this is dangerous. I'd like to turn to Acts 10, which is the instance with Peter and Cornelius, the centurion. In verses 1 through 35, it says, "There was a certain man in Caesarea called Cornelius, a centurion of the band called the Italian Band, a devout man and one which feared Elohim with all his house, which gave much alms to the people and prayed to Elohim always. He saw in a vision, evidently about the ninth hour of the day, an angel of Elohim coming into him and saying unto him, Cornelius. And when he looked on him, he was afraid and said, What is it, Master? He said unto him, Thy prayers and thine alms are come up for a memorial before Elohim. And now send men to Joppa and call for one Simon, whose surname is Peter. He lodges with one Simon, a tanner, whose house is by the seaside. He shall tell thee what thou oughtst to do. And when the angel which spake unto Cornelius was departed, he called two of his household servants, and a devout soldier of them, that waited on him continually. And when he had declared all these things unto them, he sent them to Joppa. On the morrow, as they went to their journey, and drew nigh unto the city, Peter went upon the housetop to pray about the sixth hour. And he became very hungry, and would have eaten, but while they made ready, he fell into a trance, and saw heaven open, and a certain vessel descending unto him, as it had been a great sheet knit at the four corners, and let down to the earth, wherein were all manner of four-footed beasts of the earth, and wild beasts, and creeping things, and fowls of the air. And there came a voice to him, Rise, Peter, kill and eat. And Peter said, Not so, Master, for I have never eaten anything that is common or unclean. And the voice spake unto him, saying, Again, the second time, What Elohim hath cleansed, that call not thou common. What was done thrice, and the vessel was received again into heaven. Now while Peter doubted in himself what this vision which he had seen should mean, behold, the men which were sent from Cornelius had made inquiry for Simon's house, and stood before the gate, and called and asked whether Simon, which was surnamed Peter, were lodged there. While Peter thought on the vision, the Spirit said unto him, Behold, three men seek thee. Arise therefore, and get thee down, and go with them, doubting nothing, for I have sent them. Then Peter went down to the men which were sent unto him from Cornelius, and said, Behold, I am he whom you seek. What is the cause wherefore you have come? And they said, Cornelius, a centurion, a just man, and the one that feareth Elohim, and of good report among all the nations of the Jews, has warned from Elohim by a holy angel to send for thee unto his house, and to hear words of thee. And they called he them in, and lodged them. And on the morrow Peter went away with them, and a certain brethren from Joppa accompanied him. And the morrow after they entered into Caesarea, and Cornelius waited for them, and had called together his kinsmen and near friends. And as Peter was coming into Cornelius, and Cornelius met him, and fell down at his feet and worshipped him. But Peter took him up, saying, Stand up, I myself also am a man. And as he talked with him, he went in and found many that were come in. And he said unto him, You know now that it is an unlawful thing for a man that is a Jew to keep company, or some unto one another nation. But Elohim hath showed me that I should not call any man common or unclean. Therefore came I unto you without gainsaying. As soon as I was sent for, I asked, Therefore, what intent ye have sent for me? And Cornelius has said, 4 days ago I was fasting unto this hour. In the ninth hour I prayed in my house, and behold, a man stood before me in the bright clothing, and said, Cornelius, thy prayer is heard, and thine alms are had in remembrance in the sight of Elohim. Send therefore to Joppa, and call hither Simon, whose surname is Peter. He is lodged in the house of one Simon, a tanner by the seaside, who when he cometh shall speak unto thee. Immediately therefore I sent to thee, and thou hast well done thou art come. Now therefore are we all here present before Elohim, to hear of things that are commanded thee of Elohim. Then Peter opened his mouth and said, Of a truth I perceive that Elohim is of no respecter of persons, but in every nation that feareth him and worketh righteousness is accepted with him. Peter had to change his mind about the Gentiles. Cornelius had three strikes against him. He had three strikes against him. He was a Gentile, he was a Roman, and he was a Roman citizen or Roman soldier. Yet Peter had to learn that he shouldn't generalize all Gentiles or all Romans, and that Yahweh doesn't show favoritism, but accept those who do what is right. I'm sure Cornelius didn't have everything right in his life, but his heart was right, and he had a desire to serve and was humble. You know, none of us like to be generalized. When I went to Israel, I remember someone saying that all Americans, you can always tell the Americans apart because they always dress like slobs. And I didn't like that. You know, I was wearing a khaki pants and a polo and some nice hiking boots. I was trying to look presentable, you know, and they were calling me a slob. They weren't looking at me. They were generalizing their image that they had of Americans. You know, I'm sure you've heard it said before that, you know, all men are the same. All women are bad drivers. Or this group is that, or that group is that. Not looking at people at all, but just seeing these groups that we've created. Generalizing can happen in religion, too. For instance, I do believe that Islam has a lot of problems. Their tenets of belief do promote violence and do need to be changed. I think they need to have a serious conversation about it and make some drastic changes. But that being said, I did used to work with a Muslim. He was a really nice guy. He prayed five times a day. He even had a little rug in the server room by his office where he would go and do his prayers and stuff. I helped him move. I eat with him and his family, which I think is forbidden. Not all Muslims are evil. You know, most people are just trying to live their lives, just like you and me. Same thing with Catholics. The Catholics are going through yet another scandal with their priests. They have a lot of problems too, but I've known a lot of Catholics, and they're trying to live the best that they can too. I'd say some are more righteous than me. If I were to compare myself to Mother Teresa, I would lose in that comparison. Sometimes our perceptions of people and where they belong in groups can be wrong, and we may change our minds about them. Whenever I was, from my birth to age 21, I belonged to another religious organization, and I was taught that anyone that was not in that organization would not receive salvation, and if you left that group, you were a heretic and an enemy of the truth, which is a pretty grim mindset. There are some people in this audience that did leave that organization, and I was taught that you all were heretics. And thinking back on it, I was arrogant. It makes me sick to think how stupid I was, because when I left that group and I got to know all of you, I realized just how wrong my thinking was, and I changed my perspective. You were not evil. You are the people full of love. We do a disservice to people when we define them just by their groups. Sometimes we have preconceived notions about people that aren't true. For instance, Viktor Frankl, who was a Jewish prisoner during World War II in Nazi Germany. I like to read a little bit of that in his book, Man's Search for Meaning. He had this to say about judging groups. He says, "It is apparent that the mere knowledge that a man was either a camp guard or a prisoner tells us almost nothing. Human kindness can be found in all groups, even those which as whole it would be easy to condemn. The boundaries between groups overlapped, and we must not try to simplify matters by saying that these men were angels and those were devils. Certainly it was a considerable achievement for a guard or a foreman to be kind to prisoners in spite of the camp's influences. And on the other hand, the baseness of a prisoner who treated his own companions badly was exceptionally contemptible. Obviously, the prisoners found the lack of character in such men especially upsetting when they were profoundly moved by the smallest kindness received from any of the guards. I remember how one day a foreman secretly gave me a piece of bread, which I knew he must have saved from his breakfast ration. It was far more than the small piece of bread, which moved me to tears at the time. It was the human something which this man also gave to me, the word and look which accompanied the gift. For all this, we may learn that there are two races of men in this world, and only these two, the race of decent men and the race of indecent men. Both are found everywhere. They penetrate into all groups of society. No group consists entirely of decent or indecent men. In this sense, no group is of, quote, pure race, and therefore one occasionally found a decent fellow among the camp guards." Judgment should rather rest on a person's character, and this is the most important thing. So how do you love your enemy if you have someone that you have a contention with? And to answer this, I'd like to start with Luke 10. Hope I'm not going too long. Hope I don't encroach you on your time, Lucas. I'll try to talk faster. Luke 10, verses 25 to 37. This is the parable of the Good Samaritan. We all know this. "And behold, a certain lawyer stood up and tempted him, saying, 'Master, what shall I do to inherit eternal life?' And he said unto him, 'What is written in the law? How readest thou?' And he answering said, 'Thou shalt love Yahweh the Elohim with all thy heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy strength, and with all thy mind, and thy neighbor as thyself.' And he said unto him, 'Thou hast answered right. This do, and thou shalt live.' But he, willing to justify himself, said unto Yahshua, 'And who is my neighbor?' Yahshua answering said, 'A certain man went down from Jerusalem to Jericho, and fell among thieves, which stripped him of his raiment, and wounded him, and departed, leaving him half dead. And by chance there came down a certain priest that way, and when he saw him, he passed by the other side. And likewise a Levite, when he was at the place, came and looked on him, and passed on the other side. But a certain Samaritan, as he journeyed, came where he was, and when he saw him, he had compassion on him, and went to him, and bound up his wounds, pouring on oil and wine, and set him on his own beast, and brought him to an inn, and took care of him. And on the morrow, when he departed, he took out 2 pence, and gave them to the host, and said unto him, Take care of him, and whatever thou spendest more, when I come again, I will repay thee. Now which of these three thinkest thou was the neighbor unto him that fell among the thieves? And he said, That which showeth mercy on him. Then said Yahshua unto him, Go and do thou likewise." Samaritans at the time were not favored by Jews. There was a huge rift between them because when the northern area of Israel was taken captive, which was the area of Samaria, they intermingled with the different nations, and so the southern nation did not like that, which is why they had such contentions. For Yashudu's example, in our time is like a Muslim helping a Jew, something that doesn't really happen often. The difference between the Samaritan and the others in this story, though, is that he came to the hurt man, and then he had compassion on him. He saw him as another person. He saw that he had value, and he empathized with that person. He saw that he needed help. And because he did, because he was able to do these things, he was able to show love. A few years ago, I used to work in a technology call center. If anybody has ever worked in a call center, you know that it's a very stressful job. You have to deal with unpleasant customers and be as pleasant as possible all the time. There was one lady that would call in, and she was extremely unpleasant. No one liked her. In fact, anytime the techs got off the phone call, the call with her, they'd always say some very unpleasant things, which I will not repeat. But I was determined to like her. I wanted to really like this lady. Despite how difficult she made my job, and even though when she insulted me, I just kept on going and tried to be as empathetic as possible. I saw her as a person that just needed some help. You know, I didn't know her. Maybe she had something terrible that went on in her life previous when she was younger. And she was just striking out because all she wanted was somebody to care. And so I did that. And you know what really happened? She turned nice. When she called in, if she got another text, she asked for me. And none of the other techs could understand that. They understood, why does she keep asking for you? I heaped coals of care and concern on her, and I melted her heart of stone. And we need to try to empathize with other people. It's not sympathy where we feel sorry for them. Empathy is looking at it through their eyes, looking at the world at how they see it, standing in their shoes, seeing what it would be like to be them. We also need to be humble, because I know I don't know this. I don't know everything. I'm sure you don't either. Maybe we're the ones that is wrong. Maybe we're the ones that need to learn something. Maybe we're the ones that actually need correction. You know, Balaam was instructed by his donkey, and maybe our correction will come from some unexpected place too. We should love others even though they disagree with us, not because of who they are, but because of who we are. In Romans 5, verse 8, it says, "But Elohim commendeth his love towards us, and that while we were yet sinners, Messiah died for us." You know, Yahweh showed his love to us even whenever we were sinners. And aren't you glad that he does? Because if he didn't, we wouldn't have any salvation. We wouldn't have any chance. We should emulate the love that he has and try to love people as much as he can, even if they don't deserve it at the time. Now, you may be thinking, this is great and all, but what if, you know, should I agree with everybody? Does this mean that if someone comes to me with an argument that I should just agree with them and just give in? You know, just let them have their way, or that everyone should just be your friend? Of course not. I think there are a lot of dangerous things out in the world. I didn't learn Taekwondo and Krav Maga for so many years because I thought everyone's nice. There are a lot of bad people out there, and a lot of them have bad ideas. And evil ideas must be fought, and people should be held accountable for their actions and for their words and the things they do, especially if what they're doing is wrong. There is nothing wrong with telling someone what they're doing is wrong, because they could cause serious harm to themselves or others, and in not doing so is not showing love. What matters is how you come to that person. Do you see them with value, or do you not see them with value? Let me give you an example. Let's say that my wife and I, Amanda, have a disagreement. That never happens. In the first scenario, I don't see her opinion as any value at all. I think my opinion is the best thing. I don't value her as a person. I can't see why her opinion is better than mine. Now let's have another scenario. We do have an agreement, but I see her opinion has value. I see her as a person. I realize that maybe I'm not right. Maybe I need to listen to what she has to say. Which one do you think is going to have the better outcome? The one where I think she has value, or one where I think she doesn't have any value? I'd say the second one. Because even though I may be right, which doesn't happen often, I'm not looking at her clearly. I'm not seeing her as a person. If I don't value people, I can treat them as I want. I can treat them as objects because I'm not really seeing them as people. I can call them stupid and I can make fun of them, either to their face or to other people, because they're simple-minded and I have the superior intellect. But then my knowledge of truth turns to arrogance. You know, I've complained about people, I admit that. But you know what I found? That it's a lot easier for me to complain about people than actually get to know the person. There is a direct correlation between knowing and loving. I found this quote while I was making this message. It says, "He who knows nothing loves nothing. He who can do nothing understands nothing. He who understands nothing is worthless. But he who understands also loves, notices, sees. The more knowledge is inherent in a thing, the greater the love." When we disagree with someone, is our objective to destroy that person, or is it to help them change? If it's to destroy, then when we criticize a person without seeing them as a person, no wait, I think I lost my spot. Let me back up. If it's to destroy them, we'll criticize them without seeing them as a person. Now, if it's to change, we will see them as a person because we're trying to help them. You know, many times when we do criticize people, it's not because we're trying to, it's because we're trying to destroy them, but it's also because we're trying to build ourselves up. We're trying to inflate our own egos because we're trying to show just how much we know and how great we are and how ignorant they are. And that's not how we should be. If we want to help other people, you know, we should help other people. We should want to help better other people's lives. But if we offend everybody in doing so, it's not going to work. In Proverbs 18, verse 19, it says, "A brother offended is harder to be won than a strong city, and their contentions are like the bars of a castle." If we want to change other people, we should try to change ourselves first. We should try to be the change that we want to see in the world. And I really do think that these things matter, especially nowadays in the day and age we live in. You know, I think of us as a group, and I think of our nation, that we need to love our enemy more, or at least those that we disagree with more. Otherwise, I believe that we're in store some bad times. We are in a crisis period, and now is the time to actually work together and not keep separating. In the book, The Fourth Turning, which I highly recommend, The Fourth Turning, where the cycles of history tell us about America's next rendezvous with destiny, the author talks about different cycles of history that have occurred through hundreds and even thousands of years. The basic premise is that through history, civilizations have followed typically four turnings. They usually last about 20 to 30 years, and thus the full cycle is about 80 to 120 years. The same ideas of this book is found in this book, The Shield of Achilles, War, Peace, and the Course of History. The author doesn't directly talk about the cycles, but you can definitely see the cycles in history. It's really cool when you find these things because everything changes when you read history, even the Bible. So these cycles have occurred for a very long time. In the first turning, it is called the High or Founding. This usually follows a war or some major conflict. In our century, think of what happened after World War II. People wanted to belong. They wanted security. They wanted a break from all the unrest and problems that we had. The second turning is an awakening. Think of the events like the 60s Revolution. People, what do they want to do? They want to defy. They want to question ideas from the founding. There is a cultural experimentation. The third turning is an unraveling. Think of the 80s generation. In this turning, people want to separate because of the ideas from the awakening. People want to be more individualistic, the now generation. Diversity becomes popular. Institutions that were created in the founding are questioned in the awakening, or that were created in the founding, that were questioned in the awakening, or now starting to decay in this period, in the unraveling. People start to see this, and there becomes more anxiety in the world because they see there's some sort of collapse coming. In the fourth turning is the crisis period, and this is the period that we live in now. Personal sacrifice is the thing that's needed. It's the time to save, it's the time to pull together, and it's the time to gather together, like what happened in the Great Depression. It's a whole cycle. Because we are trying to fight for survival from the decay and the collapse of the previous turnings and the problems that we had. So instead of separating, like what we're doing now in all these groups, we need to gather and actually work together. Hurricane Florence is hitting some eastern states right now. It's really sad if you look at some of the destruction and just what it's caused to people. But if you watch the news, people are pulling together because they're fighting for their survival, these people's lives. They know if they don't pull together, they're going to die. And I believe that we're fighting a survival too. And the battle is the fight for Western civilization. And I think if this battle is lost, then we are in store for some very dark times. The founding cycle is going to come again. in the next few years, decade, or probably about 10 years or so, if the cycle is correct. And it'll be based on how well we do or how poorly we do. In this crisis period is how it is determined, the next founding era. And it'll either be extremely good or extremely bad. I see the love of many growing cold, as Paul said it would happen. You see, the problem is that in a tyranny, every citizen is fearful and hates everyone. There is no love, which is what I think we're going towards, is a tyranny. But in a free society, we have differences, but we can work through them because we care and love each other. We need to figure this stuff out. You know, I'm not quite so naive as to think that if we all hold hands and sing kumbaya, that all our problems are going to go away. But I do think that we need respectful and loving of others, despite our differences. We should, instead of looking at our differences, be more focused on the similarities that we have. We can keep our differences. We can still retain our beliefs. I don't want anyone to think that we should all become Christians or Jewish or any kind of group or sect, or even sacrifice our beliefs. You know, I think synchronization of beliefs is the wrong way to go. We shouldn't lose who we are. But I think we should still try to learn to work together with other people, because we're really all in the same boat. We're either going to sink together or we're going to float together. Remember who the real enemy is. In Ephesians 6, verse 12, it says, "For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places." Satan is the true enemy, and we need to stop him. We should rather gather together. It is a season to pull together. In Ecclesiastes 3, verses 1 through 8, it talks about the seasons of life. "To everything there is a season, and a time to every purpose under the heaven. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to pluck up that which is planted. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to break down and a time to build up. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. A time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones together. A time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. A time to get and a time to lose. A time to keep and a time to cast away. A time to rend and a time to sow. A time to keep silence and a time to speak. A time to love and a time of hate. A time of war and a time of peace." I hope that we can all show some love to each other, even those that we disagree with, because instead of a world of destruction and death, we may be able to help save this world. May Yahweh bless.